Accession number 11938, Trill 49.
Mr. G, Iceton Reel 49. You're talking about the training that you were getting on the canal prior to the Suez invasion, Mr. Iceton.
Yes, well, there's... I'll explain that a lot of the first thing to do was to decide how the vehicles were going to be placed on the landing craft. And with thought of what we wanted off first. When we landed, of course, the first thing to come off were tanks. I think where the 44th Tank Regiment was when they went to Sicily. I think it was. But that was the first thing. Now, we had nothing to do with that. I mean, that was done by the tank corps themselves. They arranged that. I would say we had nothing to do with it. When it came to the crunch, I mean, it was just a matter of they had to be at the forefront of the landing craft tanks. And we were back. I mean, our priority was carriers. Naturally, was to get the carriers off first, and then the mortars, and the anti-tank. All three in proportions. If the CO thought, yes, there could be a tank attack coming from here, then the company that was going into that area would have an anti-tank troop there as sharp as possible. And you see, you can't take everything off at the same time. You've got to have possibly one landing craft with ammunition at the back, mortar ammunition in particular, anti-tank ammunition and rifle ammunition. That would be at the back, because first you've got to get your tanks off, your carriers off and your anti-tank off, and they've got to do their job, and then they want the ammunition. But it's no good having them ashore fighting like mad and having nothing to back them up when they after you've got they got them off. So you've got to have each LCT equipped for 24 hours, you might say, to get them ashore and established, with your anti-tank ones on the perimeter, the carriers probing and finding out what they can do, and the mortars in position where they could drop a few bombs if they found a concentration of enemy. Or they might find that there's an artillery piece, or maybe a troop of artillery pieces, which have got to be dealt with. So the mortars have got to be there fairly sharp. On an invasion, true, you have got the Navy backing with heavy artillery, as you might say. And one of the first men to go ashore is the OP for the naval guns. But this was a thing that you had to have the LCTs arranged so that you've got your carriers at the front ready to ramp off once the doors are dropped. You've got them coming off, and then you've got your mortars coming off, and then you've got your anti-tank coming off, and then you've got the support for those vehicles. So this had to be organised, and then of course you've got your platoon trucks and all the rest of it on somewhere else. They've all got to be fit in to the amount of landing craft that are available, which when it comes out of the crunch is never enough. I mean, if you had double the amount of landing craft allocated to you, you couldn't put all the vehicles on that you wanted to drop off the first day, because everybody wants their piece of machinery or the trucks with all the spares on there that hour, on the H hour, which is the hour which we're supposed to land. And then, having got that side of it, as this is going on, we're also waterproofing the vehicles so that if they have to stand out at sea, or it's a long road in from the landing craft to the shore, they've got to be waterproof to a certain extent that water doesn't get in the oil. Water can't get into the points or into the electrics. It doesn't matter what we're getting in the vehicles. I mean, that's it'll wash out of there. But if water should get in the electrics, you're not going to get any ignition.
What did you use for waterproofing?
All sorts of things. The best thing we could, if we get hold of plenty, was the I forget the name of the stuff now. It's like a clay, but it is non-conductive. It's but it's like a clay, and you can press it into places and seal it so that the water can't get in. I mean, a lot of these things have got to be able to breathe, otherwise they won't work. They would get condensation inside, and then that's the same effect as having water in. So you've got to seal them and hope that they're going to get ashore before they get to the condensation forming, and then you rip all these bits off, and they're a way to go. Well, you don't rip them all off. You rip as many off as you can, the essentials, like the breathers, so that the vehicles can breathe. And then they can get on. There's also, they have to have an extension stack on to breathe to get the air in for the engine to fire. The exhaust, we weren't too worried about, because generally speaking, when the engine is running, the exhaust would do it. But it had to be lifted out of the water as far as possible. And they use flexible piping for these sort of things to extend the air intake and the exhaust. And all this was to do, a lot of insulation tape was used to seal the various pieces up, battery tops and things like that, to stop the salt water getting into the batteries, because if the salt water gets into the batteries, you've got a chemical reaction that you don't want. The dynamos and the starters had to be sealed, because the water getting into the copper, salt water in copper, that creates reaction that you don't want. And all these things are going on at the same time while we're doing our what we call the wet shod training. In the dry training, we're getting lectures on how the boats are operated, how the craft doors drop, and all the rest of it. Signals, wireless procedures, the Navy's type of wireless procedure, which, when it came to the crunch, they didn't have any. But still, it had to be learned, and you had to learn their signal, flag signals as well. Really, it was a very, very intensive period.
Do you have any idea where you were going?
Oh, no. No. We didn't know where we were going till 2 days out of Portside. No, a day out of Portside. It was an annoying thing. They told us where we were going, and they shut the bars at the same time. Until then, the bars have been open. We're on the Winchester Castle, a beautiful ship. Not a troop ship in any shape or form, really. I mean, the troop ships on the Duchess of Richmond, we had to go down and do the cooking and do the engine maintenance and all sorts of things. Not in this case. Everything was done for us. When it was meal time, the meal was there, and good meals, really good meals. And really speaking, it was a pleasure to be on board. But that was that was our ship. I think on that ship there was the 6th Battalion, some of DHQ, so the Divisional Advance HQ, Kirkman, he was there, and Brigadier Senior was there, and Colonel Watson, and of course the ship's officers. On the side there were the LCAs, the Landing Craft Assault, for the infantry, 12 of those, 6 on each side, and we went on board the Winchester Castle and felt our way around. We weren't exactly consigned, but for training we were kept in what was going to be our space. And then we got used to going from our space to the dining room and our space on the deck to where the boat was going to be. But I didn't go on an LCA. We'll come to that a bit later. But we were sort of confined to the area that we were going to use. And of course, I've got a bit ahead of myself here, really. Because the lads that went to Sidi Bish, they got 4 days' leave. And I don't remember getting those 4 days' leave. I was a bit annoyed about that. I could have had them in Cairo later on, I think, but I can't remember going to Sidi Bish. And I know they got 4 days' leave. They had the choice of going to Cairo or stopping in Alexandria. And they all got dolled up and all the rest of it. But I don't ever remember getting those 4 days. Mind, I did get some leave in Cairo, but when that occurred, I don't think it was at that time. On the 27th, soon after we'd arrived, we did an early morning exercise on the Sanusi, which was across the bit of lake from Cabrut. The sort of the landing craft, we boarded the landing craft at Cabrut. I did go on the landing craft on this occasion, and we went across the bit of lake and landed on the other side. And the machine gun fire and all the rest of it, that was real enough. I went across and we attacked the other side. We were, and there's some Indians on the other side defending the spot that we were attacking. We didn't realise at the time, but General Dempsey was watching us, sat down in there on the side, you know, watching everything going on. Anyway, he'd been quite pleased about it in the finish. And I think he'd gone back and the officer had a good deal on the with him, and he'd been quite pleased with what he'd seen, one or two snags he'd found, but generally speaking it was quite a good display. And that was Captain Galloway, and I think he was A Company. And later on, the 6th of June, the LC, the big landing craft, the LCTs, they took us down to Suez, to the place where we'd landed more or less when we landed off the Duchess of Richmond. And we're in a turbo camp at Jebel Ataka. The Ataka, there's a Jebel Ataka, is a big mountain. And they used to take us out at 4:15 in the morning to run up this mountain and back again before we had our gunfire. Gunfire is the early morning cup of tea. Generally speaking, you used to get this gunfire before you did any PT, but on these occasions, I don't know why really. But they had us running up this mountain, and it was good training. I mean, I was a runner, I liked running. And then you could have a swim when you came back, and then you got your gunfire and started the day's training, more or less. On the 9th, we embarked on the Winchester Castle, which I've already explained more or less, for exercise Brumyard. And that took us down the Gulf of Suez, right? We'd moved off the canal now and into the Suez, into the Gulf of Suez. It took us right down the Gulf, into the Red Sea, where on the way up we'd lost 4 or 5 lads with the salt shortage. And it's still hot. I mean, we're back in the middle of summer now. It was even worse than when we landed before. But off the Red Sea, we went up the Gulf of Aqaba. And really speaking, it was a great trip. We're training all the time. At night, at day, we'd go up and find the LCAs and go back again and load into the LCAs and then back again. And then at night, we'd do the same thing in the dark because it was completely blacked out. Not necessarily for war purposes, but for our purpose of training. Because when we landed, of course, it was going to be in the dark. So I think we all did this LCA training. For all D Company and myself, we landed in LCI, Landing Craft Infantry, which is a bigger thing altogether, and I'll probably describe that later. But at this stage, for the Operation Bromyard, we all did the LCA training, and by day and then by night. And on the 13th, at 12:15 on the 13th, we were mustered and loading, and then we did an attack on the shore at Aqaba. That went off quite well. We lost one lad lost both eyes. I'm not quite certain why. There were one or two bits of accidents with bombs not going off at the where they should have done, and they went astray. We didn't. Nobody killed, but we had one or two badly wounded. Of course, this was not new to us exactly, but it was part of the military training now that you train under fire, live fire. I mean, in the original, when we went into Arras, we had never been really trained under live fire. We'd been on the ranges and fired live, but we'd never actually been trained with the shots going across our heads and all the rest of it. But this was being done now, and we were being trained for this with live ammunition.
What was the morale of the troops?
Terrific.
You're training pretty hard.
Terrific.
No moaning, grumbling?
Oh, yes. Yes, it wouldn't be an army if there was no grumbling. Yes, there was grumbling, but I would say the morale was terrific. The Winchester Castle was comfortable. The food was good. We knew we were going on a dirty job somewhere. We had no idea where, but we knew it was going to be dirty when we got there. Well, these are things that you don't worry too much about. If you're worried about them, I mean, you would just go like the people we were talking about before. So we did this attack and returned to Suez, but we continued training all the way back to Suez, you know, boarding landing craft and all the rest of it. I don't think the Winchester Castle had done it before. We'd done it with the Navy boys that were on the Winchester Castle, because there were their LCAs which were on the castle. They were on the davits where the lifeboats normally went.
The repetition must at times have got boring.
Yes.
How was that combated? Did you have any leisure breaks at all?
As far as I remember, the bar was open. That was one leisure break. You know, it was interesting that it was something we hadn't done. The amphibious warfare was something which we hadn't done. So it was all interesting in a sense. It did get a bit tedious when you load a vehicle up, and then you take it all off again, and then you load it back up again in more or less the same way. You do that for 3 or 4 days, it just gets a bit tedious, and then you realise that, if we had that somewhere else, it would be better, and maybe on another craft it would be better. And because it's a funny thing, we did explain some time ago with Battlescombe's episode, when he did the attack at Alamein, that everything was new, and it's like driving a new car. As far as possible, a company gets to know his only anti-tank troop. You know, he likes a troop which he knows. Now the troops belong to S Company, but they're sent from S Company to the two companies. And if possible, the company commander likes the anti-tank troopers. He's got the same with the mortar crew, the same with the carrier crew. If the carrier crew is going to that particular company, they're under command of S Company, attached to another company. And if possible, that company commander would like the troop which he's been used to, just like you would like the car that you're used to. So all this has got to be thought out when these loading schedules are going on. We got back to the our stinking camp again, which wasn't too brilliant. And on the 24th June, Montgomery came down to give us our usual pep talk when things are going to happen. We thought we might have got a glimpse of where we were going, but there was nothing at all. Just his general, we're going to defeat the enemy sort of thing. We will defeat the enemy, not we're going to, we will defeat the enemy. We didn't give us any clue, and it was quite pleasant. In fact, he went round every company, not his usual thing where he had maybe a brigade drawn up in like an amphitheatre style where he stood up on a vehicle with everything around him. He went to every company, spoke to the company commander, and spoke to the individual companies rather than his usual brigade sort of talk. And I think the lads were quite pleased with it, really. And on the 24th, we took the lighters again from Suez. The lighters, they are like a flat bottom, which are used in these type of ports. I think I did describe them when we came off off the Duchess of Richmond. But it's the only way of getting on board a boat. It never pulls into the quay or anything like that. You've got to catch the lighter and you go out and embark again. On the 29th, we went out onto the Winchester Castle, and we settled down there for a couple of days, and then we moved through the canal to Port Said. Well, Port Said was just a mass of ships. It had been the time before when I'd been there, because there was quite a lot of French ships laid up in Port Said, and there was always Navy ships of one kind or another laid up there. But this time it was absolutely packed, and we were sort of laid out in the middle of the harbour. So you couldn't talk to anybody in a sense. In fact, while we were there, I think somewhere like 4 days in the harbour, waiting for everybody getting joined up together. And they stripped us of everything, all our identification cards. The only thing we left with were the two dog tags, cap badge, and everything went. And then we were taken ashore in the LCAs, and we did a route march. Not actually in Port Said, but up towards Lessie's Monument. And we got off on the pier there, and then we walked away, marched away about 7-10 miles we did, to keep us fit. I mean, it was good because the feet got the hammer a bit. I mean, running around a deck, you're not really allowed to run around the deck in your boots. It's sandshoes sort of thing on the deck if possible. So the route march really brought the feet back, because it's amazing how fast feet go off. I remember after Sicily when I was in hospital, and the skin was coming off my feet in quarter-inch layers. You know, it used to hurt, and I'd pick it a bit, and I'd get quarter of an inch thick of skin off. Now, it just shows how fast the feet go off if they're not hammering the road a bit, hammering the tarmac. So this was really good that we did this route march. And it also, I don't know, on a boat, it seems as though you don't use the muscles. You don't lose a lot of muscles that you should be using, let's put it that way, because everything is so compact. And I think everybody tends to be lazy if the opportunity arises. So, really speaking, it was a great thing to do, the route march. No band, of course, like we had in Durban, but even so, it was quite good.
Did you march at a slow pace?
Or oh, no. No, the DLI never marched at the slow pace. No, it was a regular, and the RSM was there, belting his head off. It all gives us the time, sort of thing. So, what do you think you are, sonny? Pick your feet up. After the fourth day, I think it was on the... I've just forgotten the date now. Oh, on the 5th of July, we had the engines turning over and we moved out. There was quite a performance, actually, before we moved out, because the... I think it was Dempsey who was the corps commander. He did a patrol around the waiting convoy that was in the harbour, and there was a general salute and all the rest of it. You know, he's showing everybody he was there, kind of thing. There was a troop with him in this. It was only a small boat. The troop they're in now, I think the Div Commander was with him at that particular time. Well, there'll be a few of them, the Navy Commanders and Air Force Commanders. There was a gang of them anyway, showing us that they were there, I suppose. And then on the 5th of July, we had the engine start and we moved out. And slowly out, because some were already out, and we formed up in a part of a convoy. And we got out to sea maybe one day, and then there was another convoy came in from Haifa, which joined in with us and made the convoy quite a lot bigger. And about that time, the bar went dry, and we were told we were going to Sicily.
What was the reaction of this news?
I don't think there was any, really. I think, in a sense, we're disappointed. I think some of us thought it might be the south of France, which, again, was nicely on the way home. Some thought maybe the Greece, Albania, somewhere in there, because we knew there was a bit of trouble going on around that area. And we thought we might be going to to strengthen them and help them out. I don't think Sicily was actually thought of. I don't think anybody really had given Sicily much thought. We knew that Malta could do with some relief, but having cleared the African coast, I mean, that had brought relief in that respect, but we also knew that it could do with, because Malta was still the front line as far as Italy and Sicily were concerned. Pantelleria, which was just off Malta, that had been cleared, and some thought it might have been Sardinia, which was further up and like a stepping stone for France. I think we all thought really that France would be the objective, really, but maybe not at the first stage.
Did they just tell you it was Sicily? They didn't explain why. They weren't told its strategic importance, if any.
No, I don't think so. But as soon as they told us it was Sicily, the maps came out, the what they call the thing where they've got the built-up geography, like a built-up map, where you see it in three dimensions, sort of thing, and they had those already. Aerial photos. They gave us a good idea of what we could expect. They gave us a good idea where it was going to be, who would be. It was all very well done, and by the time we got to Sicily, I mean, we had no doubts that it would... there was no thought of any real difficulty. We knew it was a battle.
You're pretty well briefed.
Well briefed, yes. The unfortunate thing was that the Navy and our briefing didn't quite tally some for some reason. Having said this, I don't know whether there was something magnetic about Sicily, because some of our people landed 4,000 yards out of position, 4 miles near enough, out of position. The Winchester Castle landed, stopped 12 miles out instead of 7 miles out.
Is this the confusion with the Navy that you were referring to?
Well, partly. But I don't know whether something magnetic about the Etna, which is the main
thing. What course, then?
I've got a feeling that something happened there, because the gliders were dumped in the sea. There was hell on about the American pilots had ditched them before they got... they had no chance of getting ashore. They were dumped in the sea. They just... From the height they had and the distance from the shore, there was no way they could make it. There was another snag, of course, that there was very, very severe gales, hurricane winds, which didn't help. And they didn't drop until... they got pretty well into the shore.